number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
With the first pick of the draft, the Indianapolis Colts select quarterback, University of Tennessee, Peyton Manning.
He's going long, and a man wide open. It's Wayne at the 15. He walks in. 53 yards for the touchdown. They're all here to see the Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
Peyton, you have been named the game's most valuable player.
We're proud to have won this championship for our leader, Coach Dungy. Glad to bring this trophy back to Indianapolis.
Third down play. Manning's going to the end zone. And the ball is caught. Touchdown, Indianapolis. Pierre Garçon.
For 14 wonderful years, the only professional football I've known is Colts football. I've been a Colt for almost all of my adult life. But I guess in life and in sports, we all know that nothing lasts forever.
Tony D with you.
This is Tony D working the third shift.
From the Quicken Loans Studios, here's
Tony D.
Tony D.
And nothing does last forever, and Peyton Manning has come to the conclusion that his football career doesn't last forever, and it is over. He'll announce his retirement on Monday. Not much of a surprise, but let's be honest. We all kind of danced around last week wondering, oh, is the possibility there that he does come back for one more season? Not with the Denver Broncos, but with somebody else. Maybe he went fishing and nobody bit. Maybe he came to this conclusion because nobody really wanted to take a chance on having Peyton Manning on their team, who can't play anymore. But it's time to put all that aside and start looking at the legacy of Peyton Manning and what it's meant to the football and sports in general. Because to be honest with you, very rarely does somebody live up to the youthful hype that we set upon them. Tiger Woods did, a couple of LeBron James did, Kobe Bryant did. But a lot of times we have young players, young kids who are great high school football players or baseball players or basketball players. They get a lot of attention and they don't have a fulfilling career. Things go haywire. And Peyton Manning lived up to all of the hype. He lived up to the hype at Tennessee. He lived up to the hype in Indianapolis. He lived up to the hype in Denver. Once people realized he could play coming off that neck surgery and the year off. It has been a remarkable career, not from just a statistical standpoint. Because you can go through those all day. And you can sit there and go, oh, look, he's the leader in passing yards and touchdowns. He's tied with Brett Favre for wins. He's got five MVPs. And the next most is three. These are all legitimate reasons to start talking about the Manning legacy in terms of greatest ever or one of the greatest ever. But the thing that I've always liked about Manning and his entire career is that Manning was a complete package of outstanding football player, great spokesman, good citizen. People respected him and his professionalism and all things. Maybe a lot of us were played. I mean, you know, because there has to be a little of that. I mean, Peyton Manning was probably not genuine on everything, on every emotion. There was probably a side he never let us see. He was a master at that. But the fact that most people look at Peyton Manning and see nothing but professionalism and nothing but class is a testament of him being that person, whether he was acting on it or not, being that person enough to have people believe that. And I believe that for the most part. Look, I'm not naive to think that Manning is everything he's ever showed us. I'm not that naive. I mean, when you know the camera's on all the time, you can self-edit yourself in a lot of ways. But think about his story. It's a remarkable story. From the time he was a high school football player to being the son of, an Ole Miss, New Orleans Saint, NFL legend, a football legend family. He spurns Ole Miss. He goes to Tennessee. He stays for his senior season when a lot of people thought he should go after his junior year. He doesn't win the Heisman Trophy. He's the number one overall pick. There was an actual debate of whether or not it should be Manning or Leaf by people. Most people came to their senses and realized it should be Manning. And he lived up to that first pick in the draft hype. As soon as he started getting the Colts into the playoffs, they were a consistent presence there all the time. He had a legendary duel with another quarterback of his era, with Tom Brady. But then he had that year off. Then the neck surgery. And the conversation of, can he continue a career? And if he continues a career, what kind of career would that be? Then I think this is where the story is rather interesting. Because taking a year off and seeing the team fall apart, you would think under any other circumstance that your team would welcome you back after such a lousy season. But that just happened to be when Andrew Luck was in the draft. And very rarely do you get a chance to get a absolute solid, no argument by anybody, NFL ready, can be a legendary franchise quarterback player in the first round, right off the bat. And that's what the Colts had to do. So they had to jettison a legend to bring on somebody who will be a future legend. It doesn't always happen. It was just coincidence. The stars aligned for the Colts that the year Peyton Manning couldn't play was the year they went into the tank so bad that they ended up picking up their second franchise quarterback. So Peyton Manning has to go somewhere else. And he goes to the Denver Broncos. And there's a, well, will he be effective? What kind of quarterback will he be? Neck surgery? My God. You heard all of these medical people say, well, he could have lost this, and he's got to be careful with this, and one bad hit, and all of the things that were, I mean, it just ran the spectrum. He immediately gets the Denver Broncos to the playoffs. Now, the Broncos had been in the playoffs with Tim Tebow, but nobody really saw the franchise quarterback in Tim Tebow. They were 8-8 that year. Manning gets them there. They're a favorite, but they lose to the Baltimore Ravens, and they lose it in overtime. And they lose it on a Manning pick that set up the game-winning field goal for the Ravens. And we're back at the biggest criticism that Manning faced in his career. The biggest one, which was in the playoffs. He wasn't exactly money. In the playoffs, he struggled. In the playoffs, he failed to deliver time and time again, despite the fact that in Denver, he had gone there with two Super Bowl appearances and a Super Bowl ring. But the same criticisms kept popping up. Then they went to the Super Bowl, and they got shellacked. Then the next year he got hurt, and he played hurt. And nobody knew he was hurt, or at least they didn't publicly state he was hurt. But everybody kind of knew. There was the infamous, could have ran for a first down, but instead ran out of bounds against the Indianapolis Colts in that playoff loss. And then it was the bizarre 2015 season. Terrible. 17 interceptions. Benched. Hurt. Brock Osweiler emerges, and everybody's all in love with him. And Manning's time has come. That's it. It's over. Backup, regulated to a backup. And it just so happens that fate steps in once again for Manning in his career. And Brock Osweiler struggles in week 17. Just struggles in a game against the lowly San Diego Chargers. Just struggles. Manning's got to come in, move the offense a little bit. Does, gets the job for the playoffs. They beat the Steelers. They beat the Patriots. They go on to the Super Bowl where they beat Carolina. It's a defensive-oriented team. It doesn't matter because it's Manning's second ring. And anybody will tell you, a lot of people have one. Not a lot of people have two. And I hate to say this, but Manning's overall legacy, all of the statistics, all of the touchdown passes, all of the wins, all of the playoff appearances, all of that, the success he had with two franchises and many different coaches, mind you, all came down to, well, he's only got one ring. His brother's got two. People will say Manning didn't need that second ring. Hogwash. He needed that second ring. Because there are critics in everybody's life, in everybody's profession. There's always going to be a critic. And those critics were vocal about Peyton Manning and his lack of hardware. Despite the five MVPs, the countless Pro Bowls, the playoff appearances, that second ring was vitally important. We'll continue to talk about Manning's legacy, and is he the best ever next?
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, glad you could be with us as we take you through the night tonight on the day Peyton Manning will announce his retirement. News broke on Sunday. There'll be an announcement officially on Monday. 800-777-2907. By the way, I finally woke up from my weekend House of Cards coma that I was in. God, I love that show. You know what? I love living in 2016 for television, for good television. I can just binge it, watch it all weekend. Oh, it's the best. Remember the good old days when you had to wait a week to see how a television show ended?
I know, it's crazy.
Oh, my. Coming up next time? Oh, please.
I like when you still have to tell people, like, they're like, oh, yeah, I watched that show on Netflix, and, you know, they're talking about House of Cards or something, and they're like, I can't wait till next week. I'm like, what do you mean? Like,
yeah,
you can actually watch it right now. You can watch all 13 or 14 episodes right in a row if you want.
I got to tell you something. There are times where I want to be patient with my television viewing and just sort of ignore, like, when people are all in on something, like Walking Dead or Mad Men or Breaking Bad, and then just binge watch it when it finally does get available to do that. It's so much easier.
I watched Breaking Bad. I watched all of it. I didn't watch any of it until after it was over, so I got to binge watch that. Walking Dead, I got to binge watch all the way up until this start of this last one just a few weeks back. So that was five and a half seasons of just straight Walking Dead. And I did that, and it felt like 4 days, but I think it was probably about 3 weeks. And House of Cards, I watched the first two seasons. So it's just, yeah, like, I love doing that. I love holding off.
It's great. I love it. Like, Making a Murderer it's fantastic. And look,
did you see where they're talking about doing another season of that?
Oh, please tell me it's not going to be the same people.
I forgot how they're...
Maybe do another series? Like, another person that might be
innocent in prison? It has to do with the same guy. It's just speculation. It's not... Because somebody's interviewing a lot of people around the trial and everything again. So they think it's going to come back and make a season two. Which, right. I think if they came back... If they came back and did another... You know, another murder, you know, say in Utah or California or something, that would be interesting, you know, to keep this train rolling on this same type of murder or same type of case, but get away from this murder.
It's so funny, though. I mean, not really funny because we're talking about a man in prison who may or may not have committed a murder. But it's so funny how initially America was all outraged. And then it's like that movie Up, that kids movie Up, where the dog was like, squirrel. It's like America just goes, squirrel. And we're all into something else. And we sort of forget. Like, there was a time where everyone was like, there's going to be petitions, and we're going to organize a riot, and we're going to go to the governor, and we're going to get this guy off, and we're going to get him a new trial. And then sure enough, as time moves on, the attention of America shifts to something else. And that poor guy was like, I used to be in the limelight, and now I'm not anymore. I mean, it's that crazy. So, yeah, if there is a part two on that, then, we'll see. There's probably going to be new stuff to start examining. Brandon Cristall is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He's from Denver, as Denver Sports 760. We'll get his take on Manning's retirement and what he meant to the Broncos, the city of Denver, in the years that he spent there. As I said in the opening monologue, I think what makes Peyton Manning's career is so much more than numbers. The numbers alone make him one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I just think his story and his story arc in the NFL is unique and really impressive. Because we don't get guys who lose a year, a whole year, to an injury that could end everything. Right, a lot of guys may, like Tom Brady lost an entire year because in the opening game of the season, he was tackled by a Kansas City Chief and, you know, he suffered an injury and then he comes back. Manning's injury was a little different. It was a little precarious. It was, hey, this guy's got a neck injury and he's having neck surgery. And I don't think you should be playing football. I don't think you should be playing NFL football where one hit could paralyze you. That was the conversation people were having in 2011 and 2012. When Manning was going to have to go look for another team for another job. And that is rare because, again, guys lose years to knee injuries and they just come back from them. Guys lose years to other injuries and they just come back from them. This was so different because we were like, man, could he die on the football field if he gets hit in the wrong place? Could he break his neck? Could he be paralyzed for the rest of his life? This is so scary. And he goes to Denver and people still weren't sure, like, what kind of quarterback is he going to be? And not only is he successful, he's mega successful. He sets the single season touchdown mark in 2013. He leads one of the greatest offenses of all time in 2013. And he's doing it at 38, 39 years old. He's an old man. He's setting these numbers. And I think that part of his career, I think that part of his story makes him just completes a great quarterback legacy that has a lot to do with numbers, because you can't talk about Peyton Manning's career and not talk about the statistical numbers. He doesn't have Joe Montana's rings. He doesn't have the postseason success in going to Super Bowls like Tom Brady. You're right. He doesn't have those things. He has a lot of bad first round, first game losses. He has a lot of, bad play in the playoffs. He has a lot of that baggage. But I think the whole idea of being a legendary quarterback for two different teams, to lead two different teams to each with two Super Bowl appearances and two championships, and how that came about. I mean, it came about because, again, neck injury, neck surgery, lost his job because of one of the more bizarre circumstances that you will get in a franchise history. Meaning, how often does a legendary quarterback lose his job for a year? That team goes into the toilet and they happen to draft one of the more legendary or biggest draft pick of all time in Andrew Luck, who just came in with perfect record as a guy who could become a franchise quarterback. It just doesn't work that way. And yet, that's the way it went for Peyton Manning. He was hilarious on Saturday Night Live. He was hilarious in the commercials. He comes from football royalty, and he lived up to that. He didn't shy away from that. He didn't become rebellious against that image and kind of disappear and get involved in things he shouldn't have gotten involved in. You know, he was Archie Manning's kid, and he became what people said. He was, you're a football prince, for crying out loud. And he went out there and was a football prince and a football king. And I think that's what makes his retirement is, it's sad, but it's expected. Because again, nothing lasts forever, and we all thought this was going to happen. Brandon Cristall is going to join us again from Denver. And I want to ask him this question, which it involves how we perceive Super Bowls. Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl, but he didn't really win this last Super Bowl. It was a complete defensive win. Nevertheless, he's the quarterback. He gets credit for it. But we know that Peyton Manning did not play to the level of warranting this championship. But because of the way he was in Denver, because of the way this becomes the end of his career, does this Super Bowl become part of Peyton Manning's legacy? Does he get more credit as we sort of simplify our memories? Does he get more credit for this 10 years from now, 5 years from now, than we're giving to him now? Because right now it's all about that defense. It's all about how Peyton Manning was just a game manager. But you know how we are. We simplify a lot of stuff. Will we do it to Peyton Manning? We'll talk about that next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, thanks for joining us with the news of Peyton Manning retiring. Let's get a Denver perspective on his career. Brandon Cristall joins us, 760 Denver Sports Radio. How are you, Brandon?
I'm good, Tony. Yeah, it's been an interesting day. I think the timing of it worked out pretty nicely, but It's one of those things where even though you thought it would happen, now that it actually came to pass when the news first broke early Sunday morning, obviously you saw all the reaction, and I think people in Denver are excited that they'll get to be a part of one last Peyton Manning story.
Take us back to when Peyton Manning arrived in Denver. It's easy to say now that, you know, you were going to get this Hall of Fame quarterback, but there was a lot of trepidation about his neck surgery and what kind of quarterback he was going to be. When did you guys in Denver, the media, know that, hey, you know what, this guy Peyton Manning is going to be the Peyton Manning we thought, not the Peyton Manning that's going to be struggling with a neck injury?
When we got to see him in the spring, and you know, Tony, I mean, you were in Denver a while back, and I don't think people realize, as limited as watching practices once the regular season starts, that in the spring you get to watch, depending on the coaching staff and how much they pay attention to the rules, you get to watch a lot of mini camp and OTAs like one day a week. So we got to watch him throw once a week for four straight weeks, and you could tell that while it wasn't maybe what his arm was when he first got to the league or his first few years in the league, that he could definitely put the ball where he needed to and that he was going to be more than capable. And you saw that he had plenty left in the tank. Did we know that he would, a couple years in, set an NFL record for most passing yards and touchdowns in a season? Probably not. But we thought that the Broncos got away with maybe a bit of a steal. And if you knew how the contract was structured, even before we saw him take the field, you knew that they were only going to really be out 1 year at $20 million, and it got him a chance to move on from Tim Tebow, and they drafted Brock Osweiler, who was clearly Elway's guy, because the other quarterbacks in the draft, you had Nick Foles, you had Russell Wilson, you had Kirk Cousins, you had guys that would have made as much sense as Brock Osweiler, but John Elway went and traded up to go get Brock Osweiler even after signing Peyton Manning. So, but to answer your question, I think it was in that spring you had an idea that, okay, this isn't a guy who's completely done. He's got some good football left in him, and we saw it.
In terms of making the Broncos relevant, we obviously saw that. There was a moment, though, where he wasn't, you know, he was losing in the playoffs, and people, that same criticism was popping up. How were they taking Manning's time in Denver before the Super Bowl victory?
So there were definitely people that were disappointed and said, well, what has this experiment, if you want to call it that, been about, especially following the lost to the Colts last year, and you're like, okay, well, he's had three really bad playoff losses. So, you know, just sports fans can get spoiled pretty quickly, right? So they looked around and said, well, we've paid him now $60 million, and sure, we got to go to a Super Bowl, but we got our teeth kicked in, and it wasn't all his fault, but he certainly didn't do all, I shouldn't say didn't do all that he could do, but didn't play his best game to give them a chance to win that game. They got destroyed. And so I think there were it wasn't a small amount. I mean, there were plenty of Broncos fans that thought, what's it all worth? And then when you saw how he was playing this year, you really started to question, why was he still around? Why not just give Brock a chance, let the team move on? They have a good defense. And then you saw the way he played down the stretch and just played really smartly and played well enough to help his team have a chance to win and put them in the best position to succeed. And so, I think that obviously when you end it with the Super Bowl run, and I know I'm going a little beyond your question, it makes it all worth it. But there were critics out there, and a lot of them, I was never one of them, because I realized how hard it is to win in the NFL, and not the level of people who play it or even coach it. If I understand how hard it can be and how teams can take things for granted, fans can take things for granted if their team's not there or getting all the way to the big game, and then obviously hoisting Lombardi Trophy, but go talk to the Cleveland Browns, and if they would have liked to have had Peyton Manning for 4 years. So it's one of those things where you kind of have rich people problems, Broncos fans, and the ones that wanted to complain, I just wanted to tell them to take a hike.
Brandon Cristal joins us, 760 Denver Sports, on the legacy of Peyton Manning, at least in Denver. All right, Brandon, so Peyton Manning is, you know, during this season, as you mentioned earlier, he struggled and then lost his job and then he came back. A lot of people praise Peyton Manning for his professionalism. That's one thing people always kind of go to. Did he really handle all of that as well as people say he did?
Yeah, and I think the Broncos maybe, I don't know if they made a couple missteps, but went out of their way to protect him unnecessarily. DeMarcus Ware was hurt and traveled to Cleveland and was there with the team. Well, then Peyton wasn't going to travel to the Bears game. And so in order to make him look better, if you will, they made DeMarcus Ware stay back. And they're like, oh, he can get more treatment. Whereas he spoke to the team the night before the Cleveland game and I think motivated the team to some degree and is a guy that they liked having around. But they would do silly things like that. And at the same time, Gary Kubiak was quick every single week when Peyton wasn't going to have a chance to play. He would come out on Monday. He wouldn't even wait till Wednesday. He'd come out Monday after a Sunday game and say, nope, Peyton's not ready this week. Rock's our guy. And so they were going out of their way to protect Peyton to that degree. But talking to folks in that organization, seeing Peyton around, knowing how hard he was working, just like everything that he did when he was playing, you thought if there was a chance, he was going to try to get back on the field. He wasn't just going to shut it down and maybe hope for one more year. And so even going into that week of the Chargers game, where he obviously came into the game in the second half for Brock Osweiler, you heard that he handled everything the way he was supposed to. I asked him, I think on Monday, just, you know, what his approach was going to be. And he said that he's never been a backup before, so he can't answer it until after the game. But obviously he went into the game ready to go. And when he had to come in, he was able to help the team, give him a boost, make enough plays. And we know that the rest is history. But I think that the stories that talking to players that played with him and you know, his teammates and talking to folks around the organization was, he approached it he was a good teammate. He was a good soldier. He wasn't pouting. He wasn't saying, well, why can't I start ahead of Brock now that I'm healthy? And so I think that will be remembered, especially down the road when you look back at how things ended for Peyton Manning. And there was definitely some consternation between he and the organization at times, but I think that's just because everyone's competitive and everybody wants to win. I don't think it was ever personal.
This Super Bowl is going to be remembered for the phenomenal defense of the Broncos, but because Peyton Manning arrived and it does cap off the career and it does complete the mission of getting the Broncos a Super Bowl, in time, does this Super Bowl sort of mold itself into Manning's Super Bowl rather than just the defensive performance by the Broncos?
I don't know if it molds itself into Manning's Super Bowl, but it's always hard to predict legacy, if you will. I mean, you can try to figure out what someone means to the history of the game, and everyone's going to have their opinion. But I think when you look down the road and you look back on what Peyton Manning has meant to the game, he'll be credited with two Super Bowls. I mean, Peyton Manning was the quarterback of record. Even though he had a couple turnovers, he did enough to help his team win. And he not only completed the last pass he ever threw, but he completed it for a two-point conversion, a score to Benny Fowler. I think when you look back at his legacy and you list five MVPs, which may never be duplicated, the career touchdowns and yards mark, may actually get passed sooner than later if Tom Brady plays as long as he wants to or thinks that he might. There's nothing that makes us think that Tom Brady's going to be walking away anytime soon. And then with the way the game has changed, guys like Andrew Luck and maybe even Cam Newton and folks along those lines, Andy Dalton, are going to just accumulate huge numbers that Peyton may not end up having a lot of those records. But his influence on the game, I think, in large part, even as the rules have evolved to help the passing game anyway, but I think that'll be as big a legacy as anything else. But I don't think the Super Bowl will be counted against him, if you will. It does make it a nice story, though. He went to four Super Bowls and won two. I think winning two puts you in a bit of a different category with just some a few guys like Roger Staubach and Troy Aikman, and then, of course, guys like Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, and obviously Tom Brady. I think it puts you in that conversation and his boss, John Elway. So I think that measuring his legacy, it's too hard to do today, but it's going to be something where when we look back and he goes into Canton in 5 years, I think we'll have a better understanding of what he's truly meant to the game.
Great stuff. Brandon Kristol, 760 Denver Sports. Great having you on, my friend. Thank you so much.
Sure, Tony. Talk to you soon.
All right, coming up next, the criteria to determine greatest ever. It differs in every sport. What is it in football? We'll talk about that next. It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. If you want to join us on the career of Peyton Manning, it's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, you know, we can't help ourselves. We as a sports society, whenever we have a major superstar retire, we have to put him in context. Is he the greatest ever? Is he the greatest shortstop of all time? Is he the greatest point guard? Is he the greatest hockey player of all time? Is he the greatest quarterback? Is he the greatest player? We have to. It's just what we do. And it's not going to be any different with Peyton Manning as we go into the next couple of days processing his career and putting it in perspective and doing all the things that we're going to do with it. We kind of want to know, what did we just see for the past 18 years? Did we witness the greatest quarterback to ever play the game? And I bring this up because people have different criteria to make that determination. And we all really don't agree on everything. I think we can all come to the consensus that Wayne Gretzky is the greatest hockey player of all time. Statistically, his numbers are astronomical, and they have weird anomalies, and they're just mind-boggling at times. But going to the other sports, right? What determines greatness? I mean, we're not talking just greatness like one of the greats. I think we can agree that Peyton Manning is one of the greatest players of all time, but is he the greatest player of all time? Is it Super Bowl rings? Is it postseason success? Is it regular season statistics? Is it most wins, even though that stat can be a little deceiving? What is it? The quarterback position is the most important position in all sports. And so, of all of the positions in sports, we don't have a defining characteristic or defining trait to determine the greatest player in that position of all time. We don't know. People like me say it's Joe Montana because as a young lad growing up in the 80s, Montana was the quarterback I feared the most because he seemed to complete everything he threw and he was clutch and the Super Bowls were incredible. What he was able to do with those 49ers in those Super Bowls, I don't think will ever be duplicated. I don't think anybody's going to win four Super Bowls without throwing an interception in the game. But is it really just Super Bowls? Is it, you know, what else is there? And that is the dilemma when you put Peyton Manning's career in context, when you put it in under the microscope. Because the critics were really hard on Manning when he was unable to get his first Super Bowl. And then when he got his first Super Bowl, when it took him a while to get his second Super Bowl, which was a good span of almost 10 years, he went to two and lost. He had a number of postseason failures. But let's be honest here. It's very difficult to win a championship. It's very difficult. It's why we tend to lean on the guys who have won those more. Because we do know how difficult it is. So it's easy to say, well, Tom Brady really is the greatest, not only of all time, but Peyton Manning's not even the greatest in his own generation because of the success and the postseason success of Tom Brady. But look, Manning has all the regular season numbers that you would look for that played the position. He changed the position. He had longevity. What he did with two teams, many coaches. I never liked the argument when it came down to Manning Brady. I never liked the argument that, well, Tom Brady's had Bill Belichick his whole career, and Peyton Manning has had, you know, Tony Dungy and Jim Caldwell and Jim Mora, and then he had John Fox and Gary Kubiak. I don't like that because Tom Brady's career is Tom Brady's career, and having Bill Belichick throughout his entire career should neither help or hurt him in terms of comparison to other players. It just is what it is. And you're never going to know what Tom Brady would have done if he went to the San Diego Chargers. We don't have to speculate like that. But look at the NBA, for example. I grew up watching Larry Bird. To me, Larry Bird was the greatest player in the NBA. Michael Jordan comes along. All my friends, they start citing Michael Jordan. I'm reluctant because I don't want to lose the grip of my affection for Larry Bird. I finally come to that conclusion. Now, my son and my daughter grow up. They're watching the NBA. What do they know? They know LeBron James. They know Kobe Bryant, although barely. But for the sake of argument, Kobe Bryant. I can tell him all I want about Michael Jordan. I can show him the numbers. I can show him how he became one of the best defensive players of all time after, you know, he got criticized for that and then became one of the best defensive players in the league. He was a scoring machine, the championships, all of those things, right? But it doesn't have an impact. It doesn't have an impact because he didn't live through it. He just knows it. It's just like when somebody told me about Bill Russell, okay, whatever. Jerry West, okay, whatever. Growing up, it was, you know, Jim Brown, okay, whatever. All I had was statistics. Babe Ruth, same kind of thing. I didn't know what it was like to watch games where those athletes and their magic and what they were able to do came to life. And with Peyton Manning, here's the trick. In the postseason, it didn't consistently come to life. And that's where his critics strike. Right? I can tell my son all about Michael Jordan's leading those Chicago Bulls teams. But all my son knows is, in the history books, the Bulls won 3 championships, then some time off, then 3 championships again. That's all he knows. He never watched a game that Michael took over. He never watched a game where Michael was able to single-handedly beat a team or take advantage of certain defensive situations to explode for 40-something points. He wasn't around. He didn't feel it. He can hear me talk about it all I want, but it doesn't make an impact. Now with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, which one has the bigger impact? Which one are people going to remember as they head out into the twilight of their lives? When they look back on their youth or even their young adulthood, are they going to say that Peyton Manning was so magical, it was unbelievable because of regular season stuff? Or would they remember that, man, it just felt like Tom Brady was in every single Super Bowl?